This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us for a special remote edition of the IT in the D Show. We are broadcasting here in Comerica Park, home of the Detroit Tigers, across the street from the beautiful Fox Theater where TEDx Detroit is happening. And we are spending time with Chris Gibbons. She's the president and CEO of Histosonics. Chris, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So you spoke earlier in the day, correct? Or?
I did, yes.
So how was your, was this your first TEDx talk?
Yes, it was my first TEDx.
Now, were you a fan before?
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
Okay.
I'm a huge consumer of TED material.
Okay. So you knew the whole, like, you know, you got to be deliberate. And so let's talk about what your company does. Then we'll talk about what your talk was.
Sure. So my company is developing a medical device that uses sound energy to non-invasively destroy tissue that you want removed, whether it's tumors or plaques or other benign overgrowths. We do it all completely non-invasively with sound.
But everyone loves going under the knife. I mean, why would you even think about doing
right.
such a thing?
They like knives and, you know, the barbaric medicine of today, right?
If Shockwave from the Transformers isn't their corporate logo, they'd fail.
Oh, see, he's giving you ideas
already. There you go. Okay, thanks for that.
So how does that differ from laser, let's say? Because you hear commercials all the time for, like, knee scopes or doing them with lasers. I guess, how does this differ?
Well, interestingly, laser, oftentimes a lot of these technologies use heat to destroy tissue.
Okay.
And laser can be still very invasive. So we use actually the mechanical forces of sound to break up tissue without heat.
Was it hitting like a weird weird vibration level?
Right. Very high amplitude, very, very short pulses.
Okay.
And so that basically uses mechanical forces to break apart tissue at the cellular level.
So how widely has this been adopted, I guess, in the industry?
Well, we're still in our development phase. We're actually getting ready to prepare for a clinical trial to treat liver cancer.
Oh, wow.
So we're still in the development phase, which obviously takes clinical trials.
So this is tackling cancer. This isn't just for, like, old guys with bad knees like me.
Right. Right. Well, it's a platform technology. We hope to be able to have it broadly adopted for a variety of indications, but we're starting with what we believe to be a very impactful application in the solid tumor and liver, and specifically liver cancer space.
That would be amazing.
Well, and so since I literally got asked this question once watching one of these commercials, I'll pass it on to you. So the sound waves break it up. And then how is it removed? Like, how does it get out?
Well, interestingly, so we basically create what we call an acellular slurry.
Okay.
So it's basically just liquefied cell fragments. I mean, there's no viable cell remaining. It's just a slurry. And so it actually gets naturally resorbed by the body.
Okay.
Wow. So what was your talk about? Did you talk about this technology?
I talked about the technology, but I think also fundamentally I wanted to talk about the patient. Because really you can have really cool technology, which this is, but you have to remember the patient when it comes to the struggles of developing devices, just the challenges that we have had to overcome as a startup company. We always have to remember the patient and what they suffer to have that constant inspiration. So I talked about that being another big positive idea from Detroit, is to be patient-centric if you're in the healthcare space.
I could see this being, you know, like, again, a huge game changer, especially if you're tackling cancer. I mean, if you heal one person, I think your whole entire life's work is complete. Am I wrong?
No, absolutely. And again, you know, that's why the patient story is so important to all this, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to reduce the trauma of open surgery,
sure,
of all, you know, getting poked and prodded, et cetera, being able to do this with sound. So reducing that whole patient trauma, but obviously potential for cure.
Now, what's your background? I mean, how did this even come to fruition? Was you just sitting around on the couch going, you know, we should...
No,
I'm just being funny, but
no, right. Well, actually,
so I'm sitting there watching the Transformers.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
No, actually, there's been a lot of work in the field of ultrasound trying to find ways to non-invasively treat tissue. And actually, one of the inventors, well, there's actually a group of five inventors from the University of Michigan. They were the ones that were working with in the ultrasound field and came up with the idea of saying, hey, maybe we could use the mechanical forces of sound rather than heat,
right,
to be potentially, you know, transformative in this field. And
it reminds me of how, I hate to bring a correlation back to technology, but we're techies, how DSL was introduced. So, like,
right,
voice was transmitted over a certain wavelength, not over a copper wire. Then if you change the wavelength, you could transmit data. So
exactly,
it was almost the same principles apply,
right,
with ultrasound if you just change the wavelength.
Right, exactly. So this team realized that if you pulse sound differently, because there's actually been a lot of work done using sound to generate heat at the focus to be able to destroy tissue non-invasively. But it was this team that said, if we pulse it differently, higher amplitude, very, very short pulses, it break apart tissue. But mechanically, you could potentially be a lot more precise. You don't have thermal spread. You could really monitor it in real time and don't damage adjacent tissues and vital structures. So it was geniuses at the University of Michigan had that conceptualized
this. I was going to say, how do you make it go there but not there? I'm just asking I'm a complete idiot when it comes to this stuff.
Oh, no. So we create devices that are basically transducers that transmit that energy. And so basically using those devices that are very, very specifically designed for a specific focal length.
Right.
And so we know where that we call it a bubble cloud.
Okay.
Where the bubble cloud will be. We can also see it in real time.
So it's got pinpoint accuracy?
It's got pinpoint accuracy. And it can be seen in real time with ultrasound or MRI, because where we treat creates this little field of bubbles that are expanding and collapsing and doing that breaking up of the tissue. And because it can be seen so well under ultrasound visualization, the physician knows exactly where they're treating.
So where are you at in the process of getting this thing to market? Obviously, you got to go through testing and
trials. We have to go through testing and clinical trials. And so that's what we're about to begin clinical trials next year in this liver cancer application. We'll complete those trials, do another broader-based trial. All of that material will be submitted to the regulatory authorities for approval before it can be widely adopted.
Okay. I guess how does that go to market then? Once you're like, okay, let's say green light.
Yep.
Is this introduced almost like a procedure, like a pill almost? Or I guess not. It wouldn't be a pill, but you know what I mean?
Sure, absolutely. Well, it'll be a device that will be just sold to potential hospitals or physicians. And we work with those physician groups. We work with key opinion leaders in the clinical community to basically help us tell the story so that other physicians can embrace this technology.
Sure.
Yeah, so it'd be no different than, getting a referral of an MRI.
Right.
So it's, the physicians that will have this as a tool that they can then offer their patients.
That sounds amazing. So I guess how do we read up more on you?
Well, we have a website, histosonics.com. And we also have Facebook page and LinkedIn and,
HISTOsonics.com.
HISTOsonics, exactly.
Awesome. I guess, what's your parting words for the TED Talk? Are you hanging out to hear the other speakers?
Oh, yeah. This has been amazing. I mean, such great energy, awesome entertainment, brilliant ideas. And so I've been really enjoying the TED Talks. And Detroit just feels so vibrant to me. This has been really fun.
It's been getting better. Like, for me, I'm born and raised here. It seems like every year it gets better and better downtown. I love the energy. Just hanging out down waiting for Dave to get here. Just this cross-section of humanity was young and old. And it was just awesome to see just so many different people.
High school students in the crowd.
Yeah.
A lot of high school students came to our TEDx lab.
Okay.
Asked really brilliant questions. This has been awesome.
Yeah, you got to raise the next generation of,
That's absolutely.
No better time than now.
Right.
But Chris, we appreciate the time.
Well, thank you.
Histosonics.com. We look forward to, we wish you the best of luck in getting your project green-lighted, and looking forward to, seriously, you save one person.
Yeah.
Like, you can retire. Like, I'm done. Like, I'm
No, we have more.
You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. But it's a platform technology, so we've got lots of work ahead of ourselves.
We wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Appreciate your
time spending with us.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Bob and Dave, IT and the D Show.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show.
Welcome. We are back broadcasting here live at Comerica Park, home of the Detroit Tigers. This is the IT and the D Show special edition from TEDx Detroit, which is going on across the street. We get a beautiful view of the ballpark where the Tigers aren't playing anymore because they're not in the playoffs.
That's okay, but we have a nice breeze.
We have a great breeze.
Everybody's trapped inside, haha.
And we are hanging out with none other than Dave Meeker. He's the VP of R&D and Innovation at Isobar.
Isobar.
So talk to me, I knew Isobar from the Weather Channel. I don't know, what is it?
An Isobar is the collision of two weather fronts.
Correct.
I would like to think the metaphor is that an Isobar is also the collision of technology and creativity. We are a digital agency. We do a lot of work for GM here in Detroit. But when I say digital agency, I don't want you to think ad agency so much, but more how do we take digital-focused product and service design. We do some digital online advertising and such, but my team is really focused on how do we take a bunch of technology that's emerging, right? Things have been moving really fast the last few years.
Right.
And mix that with problem solving to apply things in a new way. So I think that's what the word innovation, which is, I think, really overused, really is like, how do we reapply things and connect dots? And I've connected a dot, which I think people in Detroit will be really interested about.
So we'll get to that in a minute. I want to talk, let's get into cars real quick, because I have a 2013 car, and I thought I liked it until I saw the technology coming out in the 16s and 17s.
Yeah.
What's, you know, and we all know the connected vehicle is the next thing, and self-driving is the thing after that.
Yep.
What's kind of under the, flying under the radar that's a kind of like a wow thing coming out with the cars? Is there something?
I mean, I think longer term, the biggest challenge that the automotive manufacturers have is, A, they want to extend... technology needs to be safe, right?
Sure.
We're talking about driving. We've seen what happened in recent months. I don't think the Tesla situation is really Tesla's fault necessarily. It was sort of a misuse of an autonomous system.
Right.
But I think autonomy is coming. I think the biggest thing flying under the radar is the conversation we have in 20 years on what do I do with my classic car now that, like, everybody has batteries and I'm not buying gas
because right.
where do I get gas? But I think autonomy and smart vehicles, this idea, you know, screens are getting cheaper, processors are getting faster, experiences are becoming more expected, so... what's that backseat experience like for kids on a road trip, I think, is a really interesting question.
I was going to say, yeah, gone are the days, you know, when we were kids where, you know, you
the alphabet game.
You sat in the backseat that
punch
faced
bug.
Backwards and, you know, made fun of the, like, made faces at the
yeah.
behind you.
With a shoebox full of Star Wars figures, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, no, now there's Wi-Fi and movies and two screens, and it's insane.
Yeah, I mean, Lockheed Martin recently did this thing, the Magic School Bus, which is a sort of a VR experiment where they took a school bus. They plastered the walls or the windows of the school bus with LED screens, and they loaded a VR app up, so now what you on the school bus feels like you're driving through Mars.
That was the old TV show, The Magic School Bus.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Miss Frizzle.
Right.
Miss Frizzle. Yeah. The weirdest teacher anyone's ever had.
I went to school. I grew up in New Hampshire, and we had some.
So your talk is later on this afternoon.
3:10.
So I guess what...
Oddly specific.
Obviously, you're probably going to be talking about innovation in the automotive, but I mean,
no.
let's get down to what you're talking about.
So here's the deal. Here's the backstory. I was on... I live in Chicago now. The
okay.
Chicago Architectural Tour. There's this fact of Chicago that after the Chicago fire, the city of Chicago dumps all the remnants of these buildings into the lake, right? So we made land out of lake. This happens all the time. Lower Manhattan's the same way. Amsterdam's, right? We do this as human beings, but I didn't really understand the scale of it. So I'm sitting in my conference room looking out the window, talking to a team about virtual reality. We're doing a bunch of VR stuff these days. And it hit me, like, the project is we're going to recreate physical spaces for a client in VR. So I look out the window, and I just had this thought. Not paying attention to my meeting, of course. How much land was dumped or created out of the lake? So I start to look on maps, and I think, my God, like it's three times the size of downtown Detroit over time. So is there a better way to visualize that? Because I never really connected those dots before. Using VR is an interesting way to do that. Today, we capture pictures... using photography, we can draw, we can illustrate, we can paint, but I never really get full context about what I'm looking at or what was around it, or I don't really feel empathetic towards what's in the photograph. The project we're working on is for Wyndham worldwide, and it's taking some of the resort spaces and using laser scanners and a lot of like 3D modeling stuff and recreating these things so it looks like you're in these places. But there's this technology that I came across called photogrammetry, which is created by map makers, because you got to think back when we could get up in the air, map
right.
making like was fundamentally transformed. Like, oh my
right,
God,
right.
I can see it from above. So now I don't. And photogrammetry is this idea of measuring spaces using aerial photography. So what if we took aerial photography and the 3D data that is created by cartographers and this idea of photogrammetry and combine that with VR? So there's software now. I don't have an airplane or a giant camera, but I do have a drone. And so there's drone pilots all over the world, less in the U.S. because of regulations and people think you're either spying on them or going to drop poison on them.
Right,
or
right. Or deliver me an Amazon package.
Well, it's coming too.
Just bring me a pizza.
Or 7-Eleven coffee. That's new.
I always thought worms while I was fishing on some remote lake would be a great delivery.
Oh, nice.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
So... anyway, I reach out to some of these guys who've created these 3D models. I go out and create some 3D models. We put them into VR. And lo and behold, like now I can look at this model like I'm God looking down on this little thing. And I click my remote control. I want to go right there. And wham, I am now in this 3D model. It's amazing. It's
huh.
transformative.
Now, are you sitting in like a garage? Is that like
no.
I'm envisioning what the process or the what?
So...
you know what I'm talking about, like a box-like garage where everything's surrounding you?
No,
where
no,
you
no.
have goggles on.
Goggles, like a headset.
Okay, okay.
So I'm using specifically the HTC Vive platform, which is room-scale VR, which means it's got two of these little lighthouse things you hang on the walls. I can walk around like a 10-foot by 10-foot space. And as I walk around in the VR space. To move further than that, I have a teleporting control. So I hit a button and it sort of shows an arc.
Gotcha.
Lands and I can jump to that spot. So now I can jump around and walk around these 3D models. For the sake of education, like I have little kids. I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. I put the headset on them and I show them and, wow, Dad. You know, so you get this visceral reaction of, this is really different. And it doesn't cost $300,000 to recreate a space.
Right.
You can buy a used Phantom 2 drone on eBay for $200-$300, put an SD card in it, download software for $20, and fly over the stadium. 6 hours later, I have a 3D model of this stadium. It's not perfect. Like, it's not the same quality you're going to get from CGI effects, but it's good enough.
I don't think it needs to be perfect. Right. I mean, you think about just applications like in real estate, for example. Like, hey, how about I just come to your kitchen table and we look at 15 houses in 20 minutes? And you know what I mean? Then we'll...
So agreed. Check this out. There's a couple places. There's a company in Paris that's going to Palmyra in Syria. They're going to Afghanistan. They're scanning these culturally relevant places that maybe be destroyed because of war, but there's no record of them. Like, how wide were they? How big were they?
Right.
So they're preserving that kind of stuff. Other countries, they're using drones after a hurricanes or storms to look at, like, what's the roof of the church like? Who wants to climb up on the roof of the church? Let's fly the drone up there. But we can now see in detail, like, the structural differences.
Right.
Here in Detroit, somebody said to me, well, how do you apply to Detroit? And they're like, we should go one night. We'll go out to the Packard plant. And I'm like, more of that, right?
Right.
Like, we know that the Packard plant is really interesting. We know it's interesting to look at and think about what that means from a historical perspective. But what about preserving the things that we do have? So in the course of looking around Detroit, we could go to Belle Island, but we're taking care of that stuff, right? It's not in danger of leaving. So a few weeks ago, the Heidelberg Project announces that they're going to go through this transition and they're going to start deconstructing the things that are there today and turning that into something new. So I reached out to the Heidelberg Project and said, I want to do these experiments with you to see what we could do to capture what you have today, because there's houses that have been victims to arson, right?
Sure.
The place has changed over time. If I could have done this 5 years ago, I could go visit the animal house and this obstruction of justice house that are no longer there.
Right.
And so now they've got a capital campaign going on with this thing called the Numbers House, because it has structural damage. It acts as their primary center for education when kids come mm-hmm. from all over the world. I mean, it's the third largest tourist attraction, from what I understand, in the city, right? Which is crazy,
right?
And it's just a public art thing. And so as they go to structurally repair things, how can we digitally capture this so that in 3 or 5 years, there's a record of it? And potentially, and then we go to real 3D modeling and work backwards. What if we could create what it was like 15 or 20 years ago?
Right.
So it's this really interesting blend of technology and creativity coming together to solve a societal problem, which I think is cool. And then what I find most interesting about it is map maker guys who invented photogrammetry, probably working for the Air Force or something, and the VR guys who are like, we're going to go for gaming, we're going to make maps. Let's put the drone manufacturers thinking about, we're going to go for the market of photographers. You mix all these three things together, and all of a sudden, you have, like, what it could be an educational solution that scales really well. And it's I'll tell you.
Well, you talk about just even, like, from a teaching, all three of us have little kids, right?
Yeah.
And just saying, hey, let's go to Egypt.
Exactly.
And everybody puts your thing on, and it just changes how you teach, not just geography, but history, but...
Could be anything. And
right.
It's this, and like, I'll say, so VR, this is like the year for VR, and a lot of people haven't yet dipped their toes into this stuff. It's amazing. What Google's doing on a smaller scale is pretty cool. You know, it's they have this new platform that they have within this new Pixel phone. It's a headset you hold up. And you can do more, like, there's a lot of 360 video examples and looking around. But the room scale and, like, what will become what we're calling, referring to as, like, world scale.
So, gotcha.
Like, I could go anywhere. I could, you know, it's the augmented reality stuff. You guys have probably seen Microsoft HoloLens or this Magic Leap company. Like, I want to take a Chevy Corvette and put it right there. It's digital. I put this thing on and there projects down on it. I mean, I can walk around it. It looks and doesn't feel real, but that may be next.
But I always thought that's a cool application for like stationary bikes at the gym.
Yeah.
Like I want to ride my bike through downtown Paris.
Totally.
Strap this thing on and just start pedaling and
totally.
You know.
People are hung up a little bit on. So I think the biggest problem right now is perception. Drones, like you're doing, right. You're up to something if you have a drone. And then VR, people.
I'm one of those people.
It's like the Matrix. Well, and it's funny too, because with the drone stuff, 2 or 3 years ago, people in our industry were like, drones. And I'm like, well, I don't know what that has to do with what we do. It's an interesting consumer technology, but we need to stop talking about drones because they're basically flying cameras, and unless you're shooting commercials, I don't get it.
I saw on ESPN2 yesterday there was the U.S. Drone Racing Championship.
Oh. Like, if you haven't witnessed it, it's pretty amazing because and totally different kinds of drones, but they're a little fast and I would probably crash those.
it's amazing.
They're amazing. When they go like 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're starting to do it in like abandoned warehouses and things.
Right.
Like full on races.
One of the 4K demos that's out there is
the drone race.
The drone race that they did through a warehouse and through cars.
Yeah.
And crazy, crazy stuff.
Yikes.
I would not last 30 seconds.
No, it would be in the lake as quick as...
Crashed it. All right.
It's like me golfing. It's going to be in the lake as if there's a lake there.
So that's kind of the gist.
Awesome. So like, where do we find out more about you? And again, the talk's at 3:10 for those that are listening live. But where do we find out more you and what's going on with VR?
So, isobar.com, find out company information. DaveMeeker.com, which is, I have this domain website, but it probably hasn't been updated in 6 months, so don't judge me.
Plumber's House, Leaky Pipes. We all,
Heidelberg.org to find out what's going on with that. And then we're probably going to start posting regular kind of updates. This is not about us. This is not about individuals. This is really about Detroit and how can the entire community start to get involved and influence what the next 20 or 30 years of Heidelberg looks like as... I mean, they've persevered, man. If there's a story of perseverance in this town, still there.
Right.
Still making art. And so I guess it's more like, let's all come together around that, because it's a really interesting story, and we often overlook the things that are obvious to us or in front of us. When I talked about people in other countries about this, they light up. Oh, my God. The Heidelberg project is amazing, and it's really, really important.
Yeah, and here it's like, meh.
Yeah, well, people, you're like, oh, yeah, we have that thing. And you're like, yeah, that thing's really special.
Yeah.
And not just because of the art, which is great, but it's the kind of this rebellious story of we're going to do this and we're not going to back down, which is very much in the spirit of Detroit.
Well, it reminds me of what brewers are doing with everyone has a little say-so in how the beer's made, the collaboration, and kind of Heidelberg was kind of like everyone had their hands in it,
exactly.
So everyone has a little stake of ownership and pride into it. So,
and the other thing, the last thing I'll leave you with is when you start to find new technologies that we, our generation, may not understand as well, right, embrace them to some degree, realize that we don't know everything and that things are going to change. This happened when radio hit. When TV hit, the radio people were like, oh, it's going to poison
your
brain, right?
With this.
Yeah, and so it's just another step of an evolution. So get behind it, support it. You don't need to, jump in, but at least tip your toes in the water of what I'm calling sort of these unintended innovations. And before we make laws or restrict the practice of some of this stuff, let's think through, with drones as an example, let's just give people a pathway so they could go capture something instead of just saying no.
Right.
I made a joke yesterday over there, we're going to take the drone out of the bag, we're going to put the batteries in, we're going to launch this thing, and 4 minutes later the cops are going to show up, and it will be the first time the cops have shown up over here
inside of 4 minutes. Yeah.
Years,
right.
You know what I mean? Because what are you guys doing? And it's like, but, so.
Very cool.
Just awareness, man.
But hey, Dave Meeker, Isobar, appreciate the time. Best of luck on stage.
Thanks.
There's only going to be, 2,000 people staring at you.
Just a lot of people.
Great. This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show. This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show.
Welcome back. We are broadcasting live with a special edition of the IT in the D Show. We're sitting here in beautiful Comerica Park, right underneath Section 112, across the street from the Fox Theater, where 10X Detroit is going on. It's Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek. Got a special guest here. Adam Janai's here. He's a custom car builder from Mob Steel. And Eric's like, what in the heck am I going to talk to a couple IT guys about? And I said, we like cars. Just because we're IT guys doesn't mean.
I got a car.
Yeah, I have a car. So I guess custom car. How did you get started? And I was reading on your bio, your grandpa owned a Ford dealership.
Yeah. Well, so I stepped away. You already worked out the deal to get him to pimp the 76 Caddy? Or?
Oh, we'll talk about that in a minute. But you were pretty much raised in the business, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, my story is no different than anybody else. I'm a product of the automotive environment, which is this whole area. I mean, Detroit, Michigan, you know, it wraps all the way around through Cleveland and Ohio and, you know, Tonawanda, New York. And
well, you're not born and raised in Detroit. Oh, yeah, your dad had a muscle car and your dad had a boat. Yeah. That's pretty much when you grew up.
Exactly.
It didn't matter. You could not eat for 3 months as long as your dad had enough to have that third car in the house.
Yep.
And you had a little small little fishing boat.
Yeah, in our case, we had two broken down ones in the yard.
Right, right.
And had hopes and dreams.
Sure.
But, you know, my grandfather dealership, my other grandfather started out in the steel mills down here, worked his way up to an office in the Penobscot building, and eventually became an entrepreneur. And, I'm just a product of my environment, essentially.
Sure.
And when things started to take a downturn, we just started having fun. We decided we're just going to do what we love to do. If we're going to be broke, we'll be broke and happy. I say that all the time. And we just worked really hard. That was the one thing we knew, you know, I knew how to do was just work hard. I was raised in a shop.
Sure. So. Now, I know, like, custom choppers, that's everyone knows about that.
Oh, yeah.
Custom cars, talk to me about that, because I don't want to say they're rare, but you'll see souped-up cars, you'll see, you know, different things at shows and whatnot, but, I mean, I guess walk me through what a custom car is.
We started out, the projects were small. You know, we didn't have a big budget, so it was just me. I had an old welder and a workbench, and, you know, my first car, we had $13,000 into it. And I sold it for $13,500, so that was a success for me.
Right.
But, you know, now they've gotten to the point where, some of the customers are building cars well into the six figures, and they're beautiful cars. We design and build them from scratch. So we'll take a great car that the men and women designed and built back in the 60s, 50s, 70s. We celebrate all kinds of cars that were built here in Detroit. And then we take those and we put our touches on them. You know, we bring them back to life. And the biggest thing that we do is we celebrate that history. The automotive industry. We celebrate the big three, and we celebrate the people that created that product. Because I didn't, you know, if I'm working on a 72 F-100, I didn't build that
right.
truck. That truck was great because somebody built that in 72. I just have the opportunity to put my hands on it again and make it our own and put our touch and look and feel on it and put it back on the street. And, you know, it's just rewarding. It's a lot of fun.
I got a red 76 Cadillac convertible.
I'm so down.
And there's no more. Well, my dad had a 77 Primrose Pink.
Okay.
And this was like an ode to my father. He turned 70. The next year was his 50th wedding anniversary. So I'm like, Pop, I'm buying this ride. I had an old 70 Vet, and I traded it one even up, which was the best trade I ever did in my life.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can drive whenever you want. I'll take care of it. Which was, you know, basically he got to drive it once and it's mine. but that thing, you know, it's amazing the difference in car. Like, that's, it's got a 500 engine in it.
Oh, yeah.
It's, the hood is longer than me. I'm 6'3". And that thing's quieter than any car I've ever driven in my life.
Yeah, they're impressive, man. The when you move into the late 60s, early 70s, especially a GM product, the numbers were high. They were building a lot of them, and they really had it down pat. You can still get 70s cars, 60s, late 60s cars, especially Cadillacs. You get in them, the doors close nice, no wind leaks. It's amazing. It really is amazing.
And I don't know if it's just because I'm old, but like you don't see like, I don't know, where's the 88 Mustang GT50? That was my favorite car ever.
Fox
and
bodies.
You never see those. Those aren't
good.
Like, if you drive it on Woodward, it's not considered a classic car, even though it's 25 years old. Yeah. It's funny to me. Like, is that because a product of my age, or is that just?
It is. And you'll see that demographic starting right. to shift already. We see we're seeing the prices of even some 70 cars now are compressing. That's my thing. Like, we just did a 74. A 74, a 78, a 67. We're starting to do some more of these cars on our TV show because I know that's what's next. So you can see that trend keep pushing. Now, there'll always be room for Tri-5 Chevys. There'll always be room for the 50 Mercs. But the problem is in this economy, people don't have the money to get into a 50 Merc, even though it's one of the most iconic hot rods you could get, or a old Vet or something like that. It's the entry-level price is high.
Right.
It's high. So people are starting to say,
we watch those auction shows. It's crazy what they're getting for some of these cars.
Yeah. So, but you can go out and get a great 76 Cadillac at a good price. And a lot of the times they're almost like new.
It was 45,000 original miles. I paid 15 grand for it. I mean, where are you going to go?
There you go. Exactly.
Seriously. Am I going to buy a Porsche for 110 grand? No, I'd buy 10 of these before I bought one Porsche. Are you kidding?
You buy a real piece of Detroit steel.
Oh, yeah.
And you get in it and you rule the road.
Right.
That's what we're all about.
And you hit a deer. Who cares? Just keep,
it doesn't
matter. Right.
Yeah.
So TV show, what's up with that? Where are you, what channel?
I can't announce. We got picked up by a big one.
Okay.
And it's very exciting for us, and they're going to be releasing that here very shortly. We've started filming in July. We're filming through to January. We have a lot of great projects that we've worked on.
So it's like West Coast Choppers, Detroit style?
Absolutely.
Cool.
And we got our mark, our brand really grew because we were doing something different. We were building big body, old Lincoln Continentals and all this big stuff. We weren't building your typical muscle car or Camaro or
low riders and all.
Just did our own thing, and it helped brand us, and we got recognized. And then here we are 14 years later doing a second season, our first season with this new network. But this is a really big deal for us. It was they're letting us a little more freedom. We're getting to express ourselves. They're really behind us. I'm really excited for the show to come out.
So they're going to have you like hardcore pawn, where they have you fighting with your dad and like arguing about it with your sister. And
there'll be some consistencies from last season. We really celebrate the fact that we're allowed to do this every day. And I really wanted to come across on the TV show that we're playing for a living. And we know that a million people would trade places with us in a second. So... the behavior has to reflect that. And my guys really, truly love what they do. And it was one of the things that we got the biggest feedback on the show was people are like, wow, I can watch this with my 9-year-old daughter. There's not a lot of bleeping. There's not a lot of this, not a lot of that. We just want people to know that we're trying to be, respectful of the fact that if you're watching the show or you're buying our merchandise or you're interested in what we do, that, we don't take for granted the opportunities that we have here in Detroit and the opportunities we have to work with the great people around here. And we have such freedom to be able to do what we do. And it's, we appreciate that. And it's such an awesome journey. I mean, I'm sitting here talking with you guys because I hit stuff with a hammer.
Right.
I've done AC Delco commercials. I was just up on stage.
That's okay. We're sitting here talking with you because we liked to drink and people thought we'd be funny and should have microphones.
Yeah, do you see what I'm saying? Like, that's awesome. I mean, this is the greatest country in the world, and I think sometimes we lose focus of that. Like, you really, truly can do anything you want to do.
Yeah.
And myself and my team are proof of that, and you guys are proof of that. So, I think sometimes when people want to get on TV and they want to act like, oh, it's so hard and I'm mad at him and this and that, it's like, when I see that stuff and when my guys see that stuff, we're like, that's terrible.
We had Ashley Gold on our show from Hardcore Pawn.
Yeah.
And we're like, how much of that's real? And she goes, listen, I'll film 150 takes of me being nice and doing a transaction. And then one is like the bad customer, and that gets on TV.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how they chop that thing up to make it out to be like.
Yeah, obviously the product they're trying to make is a TV show. So I understand they need these things. They need these hooks that bring you back from commercial and all that. I'm starting to get it now. We've done enough of it where we kind of understand. But we remind each other they only have the material that you give them.
Yep.
If you want to give them something, they're going to use it. It's not their fault.
Well, for every one of those Jerry Springer, I call it a Jerry Springer show because it's all about, watching the train wreck. Yeah. You got like a cool show like Nicole Curtis, who's doing a lot of projects down in Detroit now, who's, again, no beeps, just, hey, I'm bringing back old stuff to life. And it kind of, when you were talking, it kind of reminded me of what she's doing for houses, what you're doing for classic cars. And I'm amazed that there's never been a TV show, especially in this town, right? Like classic cars, especially during the Dream Cruise and all that. And
yeah, exactly. That was one of the things I kept saying. And listen, I appreciate the color culture in California. Steve and I, when we were out there working on the wheel business, we would hang out in Inglewood on Crenshaw at the Home Depot Sunday nights. Hundreds and hundreds of lowriders. It's awesome. Great car culture. SoCal, Huntington Beach, a buddy of mine, Chip Foose, great shop. Lanzini, all those guys, they got it going on. Miami, Atlanta, they all have their own car culture, and it's cool. Go to the middle of Ocala. I was riding on the big wheels, jacked up cars. But what about Detroit?
Guess where they all came from.
Yeah, exactly.
Guess where those cars came from.
That's what I kept saying. Not that I had animosity. It's that I really wanted somebody to turn around and look and say, hey, hello, people. Do you remember where all this came from? Because we celebrate it over here and over there. But then when the economy turns, people don't realize why we had such a great economy, why we were so industrious, why manufacturing propped up this country. It's because of the automotive segment.
Right.
Where do you think robots come from the medical industry? It comes from here in Detroit.
Sure.
They're experimenting with seven-axis robots. They're probably going to do surgery someday. But you know what they're going to do first? They're going to build cars.
And now the big battery plants all coming here.
Yeah, yeah. You know, JCI opened a huge place in Ohio.
Yep.
They're doing all the start-stop technology, stuff like that. It's all here, and people forgot that. Okay, we got into the 90s, and it's about making money on stocks and tech and stuff like that. And we really did some damage. I think that's okay. I think that's part of the life cycle of countries and businesses and all that stuff. But now we have a clean slate. We have this open thing. Anybody can be successful now. Learn how to weld, learn how to set tooling, learn how to, you know, be an engineer and do drawings and run a CNC machine, whatever you want to do.
It's a lost art.
Trade
is a lost art.
I was like, you need a welder and we know a guy.
Exactly.
I touched base on that on stage because we had a lot of young people there. And I want young people to know, because I'm sure like everybody else, they keep hearing bad news. Well, it's not bad news. It's good news. It's good news in the fact that you can write your own destiny. All you have to do is be willing to work hard and go out and make it happen. I mean,
just be passionate about it. And we all say fake it till you make it.
Yeah. Well, and there's never been a time when you can literally invent yourself a job like there is now.
In the 50s, you know, it's so weird because I used to hear my grandfather talk about all these stuff that were just sayings to me. If you work hard, you know, it'll pay off. Okay, I heard that. I'm working hard. I work 18, 20 hours a day. When's it going to pay off, right? And then you hear these other things. Be good to people around you. You know what I mean? It's about the relationships.
Yep.
These are all old things, right? I remember we used to do business on a handshake. How many times have you heard that, right? It's over and over and over again. I used to hear all these old things growing up. My grandfather's a very industrious person. He worked in the Penobscot building down here. He's orphaned here. And, you know, got adopted by some Dominican nuns and ended up being an entrepreneur and a great business person. He's the American story, and there's a lot of these around here.
Sure.
And they all tell the same thing.
My grandparents both ran moonshine as immigrants, so I mean,
my grandfather used to rake it up out of the Detroit River
whatever.
With my Uncle Carl, who was another orphan.
Right.
You know, yeah. So they have these great stories to tell, Robin Coltrane, but they pass on these business or these life lessons that are the what we think are just sayings we hear. Well, those ring true today more than ever, ever. Do business on a handshake. Have that kind of relationship. Surround yourself with people who have the same goals. Surround yourself with people who you can do business like that with, who share the same virtue, because that's what's going to be the mainstay of Detroit and this country here coming up. And it really is a clean slate. Pick up a skill trade. You can make as much money as you want. You can be self-employed. It doesn't matter. It's awesome.
Well, that's the crazy thing. I mean, you know, you've got, so 2016 has basically been, you know, with a lot of the news that's coming around and some of the companies that are coming into town, it's okay to work with your hands again year.
Yeah.
But then the flip side of that is all, you know, you talk about all the kids, like there are a lot of high school kids that are walking around here today. There's no vocational tech
in
schools anymore.
You are 100%.
They've eliminated shop class. They've eliminated, you know, it's, not everybody's going to go to college and needs to be a freaking doctor.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you hit it right on the head. So here, this is one of our big problems right now. There's no voc ed schools left. There's some, but we've taken a lot of that away.
It isn't sexy.
Yeah, it isn't.
But right. Mandatory in the freaking, you know, the public school system.
So here's one of the problems. Our skill trades, and this is why I just decided to address that at TEDx right when I walked on stage, because I asked Charlie. I said, what do you want me to talk about? He said, listen, there's 600 high school students here. Inspire them. Send them a message. And I said, you know what? Here's the message. And this is real. We have, our skill trades is 55 years plus. One of our greatest resources, and they're retiring or they're passing away. It's terrible. We have nothing. We created a generation of people who, I got to go to college, then I'm going to do this, right? And we have nobody.
And then we're not doing that.
So now, the one thing that pulled us out of the depression was the fact that this country made stuff. We actually manufactured things. Real true wealth came out of this country, and it came out of Detroit. So now we want to get back to work. The numbers are great. We're in the most exciting time of automotive ever. We have autonomous vehicles. We have cars going 203 out of the box, 707 horsepower. We have the craziest things happening ever. So exciting. And everybody wants it. The demand's back. We have no workers. We have no workers. And Chrysler, everybody down to Pierre, Michigan, and all these other organizations have identified that this is a major problem. They've came and talked to us about it. What do we do? How do you send the message? That's why that was the message I sent. You are 100% right. And that's what's going on. So now we want to get back to work. Drive through towns north of here, very industrious areas like Roseville. Drive up Gratiot.
Yeah.
There's help wanted signs everywhere.
We haven't
seen that since 99.
Facility.
99, those places started closing down. 05, there was a couple places open, garbage cars in the parking lot, people trying to squeak by. I know what that's all about. I was a part of it. There was times we didn't know if we were going to keep our house or we could feed the family. We worked hard. But you know what? This changed now. There's a help wanted sign on every building. There's new cars back in the parking lot. And I'm telling you, we're headed to the next revolution, just like the 50s. You can pick up something, do whatever you want to do, make whatever you want to make of yourself, but we need to fix the skilled trade issue.
Yeah.
But that, again, is not a problem. It's an opportunity. And it's an opportunity for the next generation as long as they're willing to grab it and just kill it and make it their own and work hard.
Awesome.
Hey, yeah, no doubt. Appreciate spending time with us. Adam Janai, how do we find you? Mobsteel.com?
You guys are like, okay, just leave now.
No,
I'm
dude,
just talking.
No, we can talk to you all day.
We'll keep you here all freaking day. I don't want to take up your afternoon.
Here's the problem. You put a microphone in front of me. I think some people are listening. I don't know. I heard us a lot. So, you know, I'm just going to keep going.
We'll get you on the main show on Monday night.
Yeah.
And then we got a whole half hour. We can dive deep into this.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like anything else. When you know, like, right away, you and I were talking before you fired it up. I'm like, oh, I was a little concerned because I saw IT. These guys are way too smart for me. I can't even program my iPhone. So I was a little concerned. But then when we started talking, I'm like, oh, shit. I got common ground with these guys.
Yeah,
we're the same people.
Totally. Like,
I can do this all day.
Right. We just got sport coats on. We should have dressed it.
No, that's good.
As soon as I walked in, I'm like, damn it, I should have worn shorts.
Yeah. You know, when I went up on stage and I saw it, when I walked to the Fox, man, and I don't really care. I'm not the kind of person that cares. I'm a blue collar guy. I love shop life. I was raised there. That's where I'm the best.
Right.
But when I walked in the Fox and I saw everybody dressed up, I'm like, oh boy, I just made a huge mistake. I'm in Dickies and a work boot.
You're supposed to be
right
though.
Back to work.
Dressing the part, you know.
Yeah.
He always wears a hockey jersey. I get mad at him when he's in a sport coat. I'm like, that's my, you know.
Oh, man. Well, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
How do we find you online? Yeah. Mobsteel.com?
Mobsteel.com, yep.
Cool.
And we have another company called Detroit Steel Wheel Co.
Okay.
So we're actually manufacturing parts right here.
Nice.
Awesome. All U.S. content. And we're trying to expand that as quickly as we can. Just do our little part. I know we're not going to make a big change, but we're going to send a message. We're going to live by the words we preach. And we're going to start making stuff here, whether it makes sense or not.
Awesome.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show. This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show.
Welcome back. Thank you for hanging out with us. This is a special edition of the IT and the D Show, broadcasting live here in Comerica Park, home of the Detroit Tigers, and across the street from TEDx Detroit at the Fox Theater. Bob and Dave.
Have we talked about the fact that we're basically at the kids' table at this conference?
We are. We get a good view, though. We're, like, right on the edge of the park. We're, like, where my favorite seats are, right by the bar, by the bathroom.
But none of the bars are open.
None of the
bars.
Yes. Water everywhere. We are hanging out with the producer of TEDx Detroit.
I'm Janet Tyler.
It's Janet Tyler. And you do have a day job, but this is your hustle.
Do. My day job is I'm the chief operating officer of Red Level Networks in Novi.
Awesome. Awesome. So I guess this has got to be a year-round thing. This, you don't just put an event like this on in a week, month, 2 months.
It is. Actually, what will happen is we'll take the next month to do, like, just to
sleep.
Yeah, you said it, to rest. And then we'll do a post in November, like what worked well, what could be better, what do we want to improve. We'll start to shop venues. So this is the first time TEDx has actually been at the Fox 2 years in a row. We've been at the DIA, we've been at the Gem Theater, the Detroit Opera House, Cobo Hall. We typically have moved it around, but for the last, this year and last year, we've decided to keep it at the Fox. So
in my opinion, it's one of the nicest venues in the U.S. Really, it is.
And you know, Olympia Entertainment is really actually very good to work with, and they've been great to us. So we've decided to make it our home for this year, but we will go through the process of evaluating locations again. And then it kind of starts in the new year. To January of 2017, we'll announce dates.
This is what, year 7?
Year 8. Year 8.
So, I mean, you guys are really good about not having speakers up twice, right? Because you want to bring in new content.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the L. Brooks 40 under 40. Once you get into, like, year 7 or 8, it's like, now we're, you know, you're getting towards, like, oh, you missed the last 5 years. But, I mean, how is it that you're finding like great content every year? Because it seems like you're always outdoing yourself.
So we do a call for submissions every year, and this year we had over 500 applicants for 17 slots.
Oh my God.
And they're all submitting video clips and long form written content to talk about their idea and pitch what they want to come and present. And we're amazed every year, to be honest with you. I'm shocked what comes in, and it's a very, very difficult selection process. Our curator, Charlie Wolberg, is kind of the final, the way the board works. There's about 14 of us that are in communications and marketing and photography and operations, and you know, the whole group of specialists come together to make TEDx happen. But he really kind of is the final decision maker, which works for the board. We all get to vote and kind of weigh in, but you got to have someone say yay or nay, and he has a really good eye for talent and young, not necessarily all the time, because ideas can come from anywhere, but a lot of times young, innovative thinkers with inspiring ideas to share.
Yeah, it's very diverse, because I mean, you get everything from a magician to a guy cutting grass to someone... Guy building custom cars to someone inventing the next great medical device. I mean, it couldn't be a more wider spectrum of I guess, talent.
Yeah, we're really looking for that cross-section, because the whole idea of TEDx is, though, if you're an artist... you typically follow and read blogs or podcasts about art, right? It's rare that you get to go and hear a technologist or maybe a band like Botanical Fortress. I don't know if you heard them, but that's some crazy music, right? Just, you know, kind of get you out of your zone of your typical, the stuff you're reading and doing and thinking every day. And so it's that cross-pollination. You know, we're hoping you're going to... If you're an engineer, you're going to come and hear the Botanical Fortress and go, I have an inspiration. I have an idea. I'm going to do something, you know, that's completely out of my, either inside of my day job or maybe completely outside.
So is that the big takeaway? I mean,
yes.
At the end of the day, you're like, either, oh my God, I didn't know that this was going on, or hey, I'm going to get off my butt and do what I've always been dreaming about.
That's exactly, you know? Right. It's to challenge the status quo of your own individual thinking. So whatever, you know, my status quo is very different from your status quo, right? But you come to TEDx, you sit in the audience, and yeah, it can be a passive experience, but we're hoping through labs and where we're sitting today in Comerica Park is not just totally passive. And, you know, like a lot of times you go to a conference and you're like, oh, okay, I'm a sponge. I got to pass a test when I'm done, or whatever, you know, whatever happens when you go to a typical conference. This is more about, you know, experiencing the city, experiencing, you know, you can sit next to people. And that's what I love about it, is you have this young hipster dude next to the chief technical officer of Delphi, next to an artist who is, you know, their medium is clay. I mean, it is just such a bizarre spectrum of people. And they're, so not only are they presenting,
I think it's great. I don't think it's bizarre. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Right. And they're in the audience together. So it's like, oh, you know, you're meeting with and talking with people and social. That's why we're right now in the middle of a 2-hour break in the middle of a conference.
We're trying to break people out of their own echo chamber.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. Say that again. You're waking them.
You're trying to break people out of their own echo chamber.
Yes, that's exactly right.
But I think it's also great that you guys are reaching out to like the high school community, trying to get that next generation of thinkers, doers, makers, kind of excited to, I guess, to do, make, think, right, to innovate, right? Because we have to have that.
Yeah, you know. That's exactly it. In fact, so we have over 600 students here today from the our surrounding five county area, and we're super proud of that, because that number, this is a record attendance year for us. We have 2,500 attendees, but 600 of those attendees are students, and they're here free of charge. So the
ticket... fill in the seats in the back. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No, actually, they sit wherever they want.
I'm just being funny.
No, I know, but they're the, you know, they're hopefully the catalyst for our future. And to your point of, you know, where do these ideas come from, you know, we actually just started talking on the board about, hey, I wonder if a student has ever applied to speak, you know, as we kind of, now we have an 8 years, so it's very reasonable to expect, right, that someone who's 16 and was sitting in our audience in, you know, 2011 might actually be on the stage next year.
You might rather have them speak, because by the time we get to our age, you know, we're bitter, cynical, and angry.
Jaded.
Know. Jaded, yeah.
Like, old. No, just, yeah.
Damn kids, get off my lawn. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I love it. I love their energy, and I think they add a whole other component to the conference. And we've worked really hard, you know, because October 7th, if you think about when school just started.
Right.
So you got to get those teachers on the bus, right? Literally, get those kids on the bus right away. Get them downtown. Get those permission slips signed. I mean, it's a lot of extra effort, but the feedback has been really good, and our numbers just keep growing on the student base, and we're proud that we do it for free.
We're Star Wars geeks. It reminds me of Episode 3, right? You know, when the little 6-year-old kid like, figures out where the planet is.
Was it when he killed all the younglings?
No, that was before that part. No, but it's like the mind of a child. You know what I mean? It's like, because there's no...
Oh, because Master Obi-Wan lost a planet.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right. But I mean, no one else figured it out. So I mean, but again, it's like they're not jaded. They're not cynical. They're coming at it with fresh eyes, and you need that. You have to have that.
Endless possibilities. Last year, we had a U of D Jesuit student, and I'm sorry, his name is escaping me, but... He had a class where he decided he wanted a mother that was wheelchair bound to be able to push a stroller in a wheelchair, and he literally in his shop class made a wheelchair / baby buggy combo together, and actually brought the mother that he made this for on the stage. He actually had his prototype on the stage.
Oh my God!
This is just so incredible, right? This is like an 18-year-old. He
not
was on the stage.
Not a dry eye in the house.
Not a dry eye in the house, right. But also just wow, this kid is he's going to be a kid to watch, right? Like what's he going to do? You know, I don't know about you guys, but when I was 18. I was, trying to get into Windsor and Bar. I don't know. I was not.
I wasn't worried about manufacturing.
Yes, no. I was not thinking about designing and deploying a prototype for some kind of a manufacturing.
What time does Don Cherry's close, and do I have enough money for a hot dog at the cart?
Yes.
You know, like, exactly. Exactly.
I'm so proud of myself.
Yeah, probably there during the, I was there probably a lot earlier, but,
I don't know. We can talk offline. Right, I'm pretty sure. I don't know.
Exactly. But what else, you got after parties going on, you got the labs out here.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a solid whole day of,
It's a whole day. I mean, we start with the experience, and that's very thought out, when you walk into the venue in the morning. And so, always is kind of our template, right? We start speaking at 9, but the conference starts at 8. So we have artists, musicians, dancers.
I saw belly dancers on the Facebook Live post.
Yes, lots of, and then there'll actually be a belly dancing troupe, I think, coming in the afternoon. So you might not want to miss that because, I don't know, I heard it's not, I could be wrong, but,
No German shoe plowlers? Come on.
I know, but we probably would. We probably would. Right. If they applied, we would definitely consider that because all entertainment is whatever's in it. We had shadow puppets this morning, which, I'm not going to lie, it was out there, right? But it was like, wow, someone in the audience found that inspiring, right? I mean, I'm sure of it.
Look, an alligator.
Yeah, it was weird. It was about some planets. And I mean, for me, but for someone else, they were going to be, I'm sure, completely inspired by that.
Sure.
So, this afternoon, there's a lot of really good entertainers that are on the docket, but also some technologists. I don't know if you've heard of the Flower House.
Yep, absolutely.
Lisa Wild will be speaking this afternoon, kind of talking about how did that happen? I mean, she just created this groundswell, and it's amazing, right? I mean, she had an idea, and look at it now. So her publicity and everything else that she's been able to do. So, yeah, we're gonna have it's gonna be an eclectic mix in the afternoon.
Remember her from the day that Applebee's opened?
Oh my God, that's right.
Yeah.
We took over the Detroit Applebee's.
And she was there.
Okay,
we
wanted cool.
to be out there that day.
All right.
That's right. That was, Friends with Andy. That's right. Oh, my God.
I'm trying to see what time. So she's on at 3:45.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this runs until you guys are going all the way till...
We're done until about, probably 4:45. And then after that, we're going to... There's an after party at the Rub Pub. And, so that's it for today. I mean, we're doing also some charitable donations for... I'm going to mess this up. The Detroit Engineering Pre-Engineering Program.
Okay.
The Detroit Youth Boxing League. And then Avalon Village. Mama Shu was in the morning set talking about Highland Park and trying to reignite kind of what's happening in Detroit, but doing that on Highland Park.
Okay.
And more on a neighborhood, like micro scale. So... Yeah, it's been it'll be a great day. It'll be a long day, but people always leave inspired. We're a top trending topic in Detroit today, number one on Twitter, and so people are definitely talking about what's happening here today.
It's all about the hashtag.
That's right. Hashtag TEDxDetroit.
Right. So I guess planning has already started? Like, if you want to speak next year, you're putting your submissions in starting tomorrow?
No.
Or when are you opening them?
We will probably start in the winter of next year. Yeah, we don't want to do it too soon because we want people...
Because you have lives.
Yeah, well, we want the lives. And we want the time. We actually all have day jobs. This is all right. Volunteer. But we want people to get as close to the event as we can because, you know, innovations change. And if they submit too early... You forget about them.
Or they could have
moved on to something else. Timing is really critical. So it'll probably be more. We'll do call for presenters. I think it's actually late winter, maybe even early spring.
So if you missed TEDx and you want to see TEDx this year, obviously, I think you're putting everything on YouTube. Am I correct?
Yes. Yep, absolutely. And, well, for the afternoon set, our live stream is up and running. I don't want to get too much into the technicality because mostly I can't.
Right.
But I think we had some kind of a hardware failure, and our live stream was down this morning for the first few hours. But all of that was recorded. Every session was recorded, and it will go live on YouTube.
Awesome.
And the live stream is up and functioning.
Cool.
So if you want more information, go to TEDxDetroit.com. Check out YouTube. Jan, appreciate the time you spent with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, if you got, next year we'll plan earlier and we'll get you guys on the show. I know Terry's coming on our show this Monday to kind of do a recap.
Love
on
it.
TEDx. But thank you for allowing us to hang out here in the baseball park.
Absolutely. And, you guys are welcome. See you next year.
See you next year. Thanks, Janet.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show. This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening. This is a special edition of the IT and the D Show, broadcasting here live, Comerica Park, across the street from the beautiful Fox Theater, where TEDx Detroit has been going on all day. This is Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek.
Still at the card table.
Still at the card table, underneath section 112. We are hanging out with Zaria. She is a local poet and filmmaker. And I heard you had a really cool talk this afternoon.
Yeah, I did. I was basically speaking about young women and our society and the expectations that are put upon those young women and how it can make it very hard to have self-worth and confidence in yourself because of those. And also the idea that young men are unaccountable in our society and our media for the things they do towards women, abuse and assault also.
I have three daughters. Go on.
Exactly.
Well, I had a motif in the poem where I likened women to being shackled shrines at a temple who are always prayed to by society, by many countries around the world, and how we never ask to be in this position and how no one ever gives back to us what they take. So, basically, we're put on a pedestal. We are loved for our beauty or our looks, but we never are seen as having any other sort of worth in our society.
Well, so, and with, what was it, 600 or 900 high school students that are here today?
600.
So, I mean, that's probably the right, well, it might even be a little bit late, mm-hmm. but at least the right age to start hitting them with that message.
Yeah, and I met so many beautiful young girls and guys who came from various high schools around here who told me that the poem really spoke to them. So many of them told me that they felt the same way I had, where you look in the mirror every day. And you look at your skin color, and if it doesn't match, especially if you're a minority, when you look in the mirror, you feel as if you aren't worth much, that you aren't beautiful, that you aren't pretty, and of course that confidence goes into school, your schoolwork.
Right.
You are affected by that because you can no longer focus just on homework or on your what you're learning in class. You're now focusing on how are people looking at me? Who am I as a person? And, you know, as a teenager and an adolescent, it's super important to know who you are. You know, you're trying, this is a time when you're trying to figure out what defines you. And at this pivotal time, we have the media telling them that they
this is what you're supposed to be.
Yeah, this is what you're supposed to be. And what you, everything you are is not right. And that can be very damaging, you know, to your self-esteem. So I met so many really, really interesting teenagers today who really identified with my message.
So I think from what, I mean, my oldest is 12, so I don't really know the high school culture yet, and I've been out of high school for 25 years now. Mm-hmm. But the cliques that defined us in when I went to school, I graduated in 91, are they, do they, I think the walls are breaking down a little bit, where it's cool to be a geek, almost like Revenge of the Nerds is coming to fruition. And but again, I think the cliques are kind of, they're not there anymore as they once were. Am I wrong in that?
No, I believe, especially in my high school experience, of course I can't speak for everyone, I think the cliques that we have in the movies now, you know, the geek goth nerds, those don't really exist, like you were saying.
Wait, there's no more Mean Girls?
Yes, it's no more Mean Girls, no more High School Musical. It's more so you have your style that you like. A lot of times now there's the hipsters, the kind of nerdy, cool kids now who have their flannel and their square glasses right. style. And then, of course, there's always that group of kids who have this air about themselves as if they are better, who will still bully. Bullying right. is a huge issue still. But the cliques no longer exist. It's more so now a clique online. Online bullying, online texting, social media now. That's the issue.
I caught my daughter, her friend added her to an Instagram page bullying a kid in school.
Wow.
And I went ballistic. Like, you have, and it had an F-bomb in the title about this kid, and I'm like, Why is your picture on it? Like, you know, I go, don't you, I watch everything, you know, but I think.
Well, if I've said it once, I've said it a million times. I thank God we didn't have social media when we were.
No.
I can't even imagine.
No, but I put the fear of God in my kid. I'm like, you're dead. I helped build the internet. Mm-hmm. Like, I know everything. I see everything. And they don't know the difference.
Right.
The fact that this is a 12-year-old girl making a bullying Instagram site, making fun of a kid in their school, I was just floored.
Well, yeah. I think that's the biggest.
It's one thing talking crap in gym or something. It's another thing publicly.
Well, I was just going to say, I think that's the biggest difference now is, you know, like with us, you know, okay, yeah, I'm going to kick your ass by the bike racks after school, and then everybody goes home.
And it's done.
And then mm-hmm. you come back the next day, and you're trading peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and life's good.
Right.
It is a 24/7 cycle now.
Now they videotape it on their phone, and then they put it up to Facebook Live, and then they share with everybody.
It's tweeted. It's I mean, it's a completely different world now. I fear for my kids too.
Yeah, I agree with the fact that it's 24/7. Now you no longer can have a break when you're being bullied. Now, if you have social media every day, if you look at it, you can see someone else saying something awful about yourself. Or about your family, or about your grades, just anything really that they can pick at. They that's what they want to pick at. But mainly my poem, instead of bullying, it was more so the idea that we're making young girls think that they have to fight amongst themselves as if there's this invisible race going on where there's this competition of I'm better than this girl. Yeah. I'm prettier than this girl. And how sad it is that we're making that the topic of discussion amongst young girls instead right. of, you know, normal kid stuff growing up. Instead of, they have so much more to worry about than that.
But, well, and I guess, you know, that's the one thing that probably hasn't changed is when you're at that age,
mm-hmm.
you know, you look back at it, you know, they're running it, you know, when I was 16, I thought I knew everything. And then mm-hmm. I hit 18 and I was like, oh my God, I was a moron. Now I know everything. Then you hit 21 and you're like, oh, what the hell was I thinking at 18?
Mm-hmm.
Now I know everything. And then you hit 25 and 30. But when you're in that, you know, all of the Dawson's Creeks, Party of Fives, oh, you know, all this, that time in your life seems like it is the most important time mm-hmm. that there will ever be. You know, so whether it's, you know, the cyberbullying or, God, the increased rate that you're seeing in, you know, younger kids committing suicide now because of bullying, whether it's online or in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a bizarre dynamic now.
But here's my take, and correct me, like, the things, like, maybe you see it because it's on social and it's shared in news stories and stuff, but, like, having the slow kid score a touchdown in football, or, you know, like back in, like, we were mean, like bad, like we beat the heck out of him, throw him in a garbage can, like when we were, and I see there's this reach out now, like sit with the kid that's sitting alone at school. Before, we'd like spitballs and right, and I don't know if it's just because I see that some of those feel good stories or not, or if that's actually what's changing. Because I mean, I really push that on my kids too. Is, hey, if you see somebody sitting by themselves, just do me a favor and sit down and have lunch with them. You hang out with your friends all day. You're on your iPad with them at, you know, when you're home or you're playing with them. Mm-hmm. Please just help out that kid, mm-hmm. you know, for the love of God, you know. So and they're doing a really good job of it. But I think that needs to be pushed on more kids.
Yeah, I think it's getting better. Of course, all of those feel-good stories you're talking about, we're seeing a lot of kids now who are trying to do good for people, who are trying to be nice to people instead of bullying. I think we're doing good with bullying campaigns. We're getting a lot more word out about teaching kids that it's wrong, you know, to bully others, to make them feel bad about themselves. And so I think it is getting better in that aspect. I do.
So your YouTube video will be out as soon as they're done with production, probably like next week?
Yes, I believe so. It will be.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. But it was, the main part about the poem was about our rape culture. I guess I should say that too. About how we teach boys to be unaccountable. How everything we put in the media about rape is always about what a woman could be doing to prevent it, instead of about a man not doing it in the first
place. Like, yep. Nothing worse than sending a girl home from school with an outfit because it's too distracting. Because it's like,
yeah,
what you're saying is boys can't control themselves.
Yeah, your shoulders can't be out. That's completely...
Skirt above the knees, scandalous. No, go home. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what you're teaching. That's what you're telling.
So
and I totally believe, I'm on the same page with you on that.
Yeah, so we're teaching the girls too to view their bodies as sexual objects as well as the men or the young boys.
Right.
And we should start young.
And again, daughters know.
Yeah.
And we hear stories. And I feel, you know, honest to God, we there's a podcast on our network of a couple girls in their mid to late 20s talking about dating. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't imagine to be single this day and age the way girls are just disrespected, treated, mm-hmm. What they have to go through,
mm-hmm.
stood up. Like, it's yeah, I don't even know nuts. How to correct it.
It's disgusting. It really is. I had a line. I'm trying to think of a line that I had in there. I said, when you are finally willing to speak, instead of asking about the boy's name, they will ask about the number of his football jersey. So I had that line in there, too, because we've had so many cases where there have been college boys who are in football teams or any
swimmers.
Other sports team.
Yeah.
And if they commit a crime, the first thing they ask is, you know, what number they are.
What are stats?
If they're a star.
Yeah.
And if they're a star, we can't let them go for the season, regardless if they committed something illegal towards a woman.
Look at Ray Rice. Yeah. I mean, my God. Like, you know, you had videotape of it, and it still was like, oh, well, he still can play, so... We'll let him on the team.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wait, what?
We'll review it. There's nothing to review. I mean, and then we have women who I've seen on interviews on YouTube who feel even more disrespected when they go to the police stations and the police have questions that...
What'd you do?
Yeah, like, what were you
wearing? How many drinks did you have? What were you wearing?
Right.
Did you lead them on? Yep.
Yeah, and it's the only crime, in a way, rape, that the victim becomes the perpetrator as if you committed it towards yourself.
Right.
So you're treated as if you are the one who did something wrong, when regardless of what you were wearing, if you were wearing a turtleneck and jeans and boots and you couldn't see any skin, or if you were wearing a miniskirt...
If you're wearing nothing,
you
it doesn't matter.
You shouldn't be assaulted. There's nothing to justify doing something like that to mm-hmm. a person. There's nothing. And we need to have campaigns about that instead of... You know, being aware, self-defense.
And that's right. Probably the last thing that's being talked about. When you look at all the grand scheme of all, like, bullying is one thing, but I think that's more important. If you want to make fun of someone, so what? But this is, you're hurting someone for the rest of their life.
Yeah, you are damaging in their lives, and no one seems to care or be outraged about it. We have percentages of college students being raped every single year, and... No one's doing anything about that. There aren't a lot of campaigns that you see on TV. Not a lot of people talking about this, what we should be doing about it. Campus security doesn't do much to, you know, watch the parties to monitor what's going around. Because then in that case, there wouldn't be as many counts of that crime happening. If they were truly monitoring like they should be.
Well, at least you're starting by getting the conversation started here, which is step one. And then, you know, again, it's something that needs to be addressed, but, you know, more mm-hmm. people need to get involved, right?
Yeah, and as soon as we get involved and start teaching girls to view themselves as worth something, we start teaching guys to view women as being worth something, too, other than their bodies, then we're going to have better self-esteem for young girls. they're going to feel better about themselves.
I need all the help confident. I can get. If you have any other tips and tricks, I'm all ears. Going into 13, I'm my biggest fear right now, right? Yeah. So,
and I think, of course, it's going to be hard regardless. I mean, there's no magic word to say to a young pre-adolescent or teenage girl, because there are a lot of negative voices out there. But I think with me personally, I know my parents, they personally told me constantly that being a teenager, being in this weird, odd stage of confusion is not forever, even though it feels as if it will be, that you have to be secure in yourself. And I know that's not something that happens over time. So just reassuring the person about things that they're good at.
I say the same thing. I just say own it.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do, whatever you do, own it.
Yeah.
So, hey, we got to wrap things up. Zaria, we appreciate the time spent with us.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.